might slip, you might slide, you might stumble and fall by the roadside. But don't you ever let nobody drag your spirit down. Remember you walking up the heaven. Don't let nobody turn you around. Walk with the rich, walk with the poor. Learn from everyone, that's what life is for. And don't you let nobody drag your spirit down. Remember you walking up to heaven. Don't let nobody turn you around.
That's singer, songwriter, and acoustic blues musician Eric Bibb with Don't Let Nobody Drag Your Spirit Down. It's from his 2001 album, Painting Signs. Eric Bibb, the son of the late musical theater and folk singer and actor Leon Bibb, was born in New York, but now lives in Helsinki, Finland. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, of course, we know what's happening today. All eyes are focused on the state of Iowa, where voting in the 2016 presidential race gets off to a high-pitched start. And by night's end tonight, there'll be fodder for political analysts' predictions about who the next occupant of the White House will be. Well, this is no run-of-the-mill runoff, as you know. It's a history-making contest, though not for the reasons most often cited. For behind this media-manufactured excitement is a sordid truth. Voters are merely the quarry in a well-organized big-money hunt for power among self-appointed guardians of America's old world order. And that's what we are witnessing today with the Iowa caucuses. I thought I would talk about that a bit because the job was well done so far by a compliant media that are just ginning up this race as if it were, I mean, this is the most spectacular thing ever. And we are supposed to dismiss the fact that the field of candidates is woeful, just so sad, that these people who present themselves as very well qualified to occupy the White House and lead this nation, that this is the best we've got. And with perhaps 1.5 exceptions, most of the candidates fall far short of what one would think should be, you know, the stuff of leadership of a country of this prominence, especially in the world. And we have to ask ourselves, how did we arrive at this point where supposedly, you know, we are to connect with this election in the prescribed way, that we have a huge investment in the outcome, and that these people, Republicans and Democrats alike, truly have our interests at heart. They are well prepared for this thing called leadership, and they have a vision that is shared. I think we have to regard this election ultimately for its historicity. It is going to be history-making, but not for the reasons that we are being told. It isn't because there's a chance of the first female president of the United States. It isn't because of that at all, because Hillary Clinton is a great danger. That's the ultimate thing about Hillary Clinton. She's a very dangerous candidate. And if we've reached the point where people are encouraged to look instead at her body parts as the great qualifier for office, then we have arrived at a very sad point in our collective history indeed. The woman is just the worst possible candidate that could ever run for anything. I wouldn't elect Hillary Clinton for dog catcher. It would be a great disservice to dogs. The woman is just absolutely the worst possible kind of person that we should have as a leader of this country or any other country. We talked just last week that she actually is one candidate who is running two presidential campaigns. The other one, the very quiet one that nobody's talking about, is in Haiti, where she is principally responsible for the calamity and the craziness, the chaos that Haiti has descended into in this presidential race. She had personally seen to it that a crazy candidate was actually elected there, but that was her choice. That was her personal choice, and she went down there to see to it that he was put in place. She even snuffed out the possibility of the ascendancy of a woman becoming the president of Haiti. She saw to that. She put in and saw to it that he was put in, Michel Martelly, as the president of Haiti. We've talked about Hillary Clinton being half of the team, the Bonnie and Clyde team, Hill and Bill, of politics. These are the worst possible people. This is why the word kakistocracy was invented, because they knew people like Hillary and Bill existed. Government by the worst possible elements of society. A kakistocracy. That's the Greek word for it. And then from there you have variations, the Donald Trumps and so forth. You have people who have no business being in power. But this is why this is a historic election, because the country has made a decided move, a total shift away from any pretense of democracy at all. It is a brazen contest by brazen candidates, for the most part, who want their shot at power, a personal shot at power, and money, and power, and money. Money and power, that's what rules this election, and that's what has brought us to this point. You know, Gallup has been doing a particular poll, a type of poll, since 1992. And, of course, you know, we've discussed polls, how polls are done and why they're done, but this particular poll tracks the popularity or unpopularity of presidential figures and even presidents. And guess what? The Gallup poll shows that Donald Trump, the leader on the Republican side, the presumed front runner on the Republican side, has an unfavorability rating of 60%. And Hillary Clinton has an unfavorability rating of 52%. And she is the presumed front runner on the Democratic side. These These are number one and number three, respectively. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, since Gallup has been tracking the favorability and unfavorability of presidential candidates and presidents. Number two was George Bush, George H.W. Bush, back in 1992. So of the three most unpopular presidential figures running for president since 1992, according to Gallup, it is a credible polling outfit, as polling outfits go. Two of the three people are currently running, and they are currently front runners, and they are currently hated more than any of the other candidates. And that tells you the dilemma. That tells you where things are. Hillary Clinton, though absolutely not a favorable candidate by the polling standards, more than half of the people hate her, don't like her, find her to be very, very suspect as a candidate, is the front runner on the Democratic side. And 60% of the people say they can't stand Donald Trump, and yet he is the front runner on the Republican side. So what does this say about the state of affairs? It says that this is a contrived business. If people, the logical reasoning would be, if people don't like you, you shouldn't even be on the map. You shouldn't be anywhere on the radar screen as a candidate. And yet the exact opposite is true, according to the polls. So what's going on here? This is what I am suggesting, that we have crossed a particular line in the choreography of campaigns, in the effectiveness of the propaganda machine, and more so in the strategic use of money, which brings power. And here we have a decided crossing of the line of the oligarchs. The people with money can have whatever they want, including popularity, front-runner status, even when, by the polls, they are absolutely unpopular. People don't like them. They don't trust them. They don't want them. But they're the front-runners just the same. And therein is the state of affairs with our political system. The wrong people can compel the media to do its job for them, promote them. It can compel a system to come to their support. Hillary Clinton, disliked as she is, got the President of the United States to all but come out and say, "I am endorsing Hillary." This is the guy who's heading up the Democratic Party, who's well aware that at least two other people are running, Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley. But Obama doesn't even pay them any mind at all. He comes out and he's singing the virtues of this very unvirtuous woman, selling her to America. And what does she say? She is clear that her political fortunes lie with the black vote. As popular as she is, the great probable first woman president, she can't really trust the woman's vote. White woman's vote. But it is the black vote that is supposed to tide her over. Bernie Sanders, the difference between success and failure as a presidential candidate, it will be the support of the grassroots. But these, in fact, are oligarchs. Well, maybe not so much Bernie Sanders, but he has the mindset of the oligarchs. he's not so convinced of democratic socialism that it would cause him to part ways ideologically and openly and forcefully with it. He's not going to attack Hillary Clinton, the iconic representation of all the things that he's supposed to be fighting against. He's not going to attack that. He observes the rules. On this other side, we have a Donald Trump who simply just barnstormed his way in because he's a guy with money. And we explained why he became a candidate and how he became a candidate. It has to do with the presumed money both he and Hillary Clinton will be expected to spend in this most expensive election cycle so far. Of course, Trump has even outwitted the predictions. He has spent very little money, comparatively speaking. He has spent the least money so far of the high-profile people running. But this race is expected to cost a lot of money. $5 billion in campaign ads alone. And the media had decided some time ago, it looked at the filings and it saw, the other candidates aren't raking in as much dough. So the people with the most money on the person with the most money on the Republican side so far is Trump. The person with the most money on the Democratic side to spend on campaign advertising is Hillary Clinton. Therefore, they will be the candidates. Therefore, they will get the coverage. Therefore, an unsuspecting public will come to know them as the front runners. And so said, so done, as Yul Brynner said in that movie, The Ten Commandments, so let it be written, so let it be done. And that's how we know them, and that's how they became front runners. The presumption that they have a juggernaut of a spending machine that will release millions and millions of dollars in campaign ads. The media literally created Donald Trump out of nowhere. He's not any more gifted or any more talented or any more anything than the others, really. It's just that he has the money to do it. It's the same way that Bloomberg became mayor of the city of New York, beginning this oligarchic trend. I've got money, therefore I'm smart. Therefore, I should be able to do whatever it is I want to do. And therefore, I can achieve whatever it is I wish to achieve, including running the United States. But it's only the first step. My real intent is to rule the entire planet, to rule the world, because I have the money. Money equals power. Power equals the right to do everything. And entitlement, unquestioned entitlement. So we have a confluence of interest here. The media have decided that money talks. The decisions about coverage, the decisions about what you and I know, the decisions about who gets covered, the decisions about the so-called issues, all these decisions we have no influence over. It's the money, the people with the money who are calling the shots. And so they created, they fabricated, they manufactured a campaign where every logical clue would lead a decent thinking person to say, there's nothing here. There is no story here yet. We have a bunch of misfits, and they're all kind of jockeying for positions, but we have no real story here yet. We have no real campaign here yet. But we could make one. And so they indulge the fantasy that Donald Trump really has something important to say and something important to offer. that Hillary Clinton is as pure as the driven snow. There's no reason to subject this woman to any close scrutiny, nor to really take a look, a hard look, at how she achieved whatever it is she has achieved so far and what she aims to achieve in the very near future. The media and the individuals running and their campaigns, they're all one big club now. They're one big club. And together, this loose conspiracy of interest, this confluence of interests, has taken us from, there's no ideal democratic expression here, but we can tell that the tone, the nature of this presidential race differs markedly in so many ways from what has gone before. Not that they were perfect in any way at all, but at least there was a pretense. Let's pretend that this is about a democratic process. Let the people kind of have a view that there's something going on here that is in my interest. And I have a reason to be concerned. And that these are so-called real issues. But this is not what's happening. This election cycle is a definitive, it's like the BC and AD of politics. The media, for example, was given to not debates, but dog and pony shows, show and tell programs, and essentially it was an event planning. These are events. There's no journalism going on here. There's nobody really discussing issues at a level that even pretends to hearken to the values, journalistic values. No. Whoever pays the highest or whoever can shell out the most money gets the most favorable coverage. CNN was just absolutely a feat. You add up the cable network news, and you see, my God, this is journalism? This is what people are doing and calling themselves journalists? Well, of course, that's what's happening because the decisions are being made by the suits upstairs. The decisions are made there. So you and I, the public, we get to know what's the issue based on whatever the candidates with the most money say the issues are. And then that provokes coverage, quote unquote. It's as if the media no longer know what a story is. And that is why I say this election cycle is a definitive move into the camp of just insanity, pure insanity. But it still has to retain enough of a semblance of democratic order. So they concoct something, they call this an election. And they present it to the public as if this is real, as if this is it's not already a fait accompli. And this is the conspiracy that we're in. We have the media deciding they don't need to do their jobs anymore. They don't need to investigate. They don't need to subject candidates. They don't need to, as the popular word is, to vet anybody. Whoever pays or can pay the most, shell out the most money, those are the people we will pay attention to. Those are the people who will get preferential treatment. Those are the people we will create news around. And Hillary Clinton, I tell you, there is no greater example of a a totally capitulating press. There's no better example than the coverage of Hillary Clinton and the making, the remaking, the refashioning, the rebranding, all these corporate terms to sell the people somebody who is the vilest, worst possible candidate ever to be presented for the Oval Office. And, you know, she has a good chance of getting her way. She's gotten her way so far. With nothing, really, comparatively speaking, to what other people have had to present as qualifications for the various offices that they have held. And even as we speak, this person who is the most investigated first lady ever in the history of the United States, at the center of so many criminal investigations, you would never ever associate Hillary. She's been cleaned up and she's been all of these damaging things have been excised. She's not at all associated with anything negative. And that's what we have. So we have to look at this election and bear in mind that the con game has been extremely effective. They've been able to reorganize our thinking. We are the people who are told what to do in order to just continue the farce, take it all the way to the end. That this is a democratic process. It is not. That these people are qualified for leadership. They are not, for the most part. That the quote, issues that they have identified are shared issues, or that they have a true and genuine concern about what it is they're talking about. That they have a vision that is even rational. That they are even sane people. These questions are completely irrelevant as far as current coverage is concerned. We are to accept the fact that simply because they're running, they're sane people. They should be trusted. And I'm stuck with this conundrum here. The leaders of the duopoly, Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side, and Donald Trump on the Republican side, according to Gallup polls, are the two most untrusted or distrusted people in the race. And yet they are the leaders. That tells us where we are. That tells us that there's something here that is just not adding up. It's not matching. And this is what politics has become. And it has become this way because it has been engineered to be this way. It has purposely been tinkered with so as to yield the desired and desirable outcome. Which makes of us, the voters, just a bunch of, you know, we're victims. We've been slammed. We've been mugged. We are being mugged. I talked about this experience when I decided more than 15 years ago not to vote unless there was an absolutely compelling reason to do so. And that epiphany I experienced in a voting booth, of all places. I was in the voting booth. If ever there was a wonderful example of the conscientious voter, I was that. You look it up, those two words in the dictionary, you would have seen my face. I was a conscientious voter. I was there even before the people who were to set up the joint were there. And then I'm in the voting booth. I'm a reasonably intelligent person. I'm reasonably, you know, I keep pace with the issues of the day. And there I am in the voting booth, and the mugging was in progress. I'm asked to vote on a referendum, a multi-million-dollar funding package, bond package, described in just about a little bit more than one sentence, probably two sentences. And I'm to vote yes or no. Really? There's no further information, and I didn't see this referendum coming. I had no idea about it. But there I am in the voting booth, expecting to do my job as a citizen, as an informed citizen, to vote yes or no on a multi-million dollar project, which is not explained at all. Then I move over to the right-hand column, and there are names before me for judge of this court and judge of that court. And I'm supposed to select people I don't know, people who were not allowed to campaign even. So I am reduced as a conscientious voter to evaluating the sound of their name. Do I like Jack Jones? Does it sound better than Fred Smith? Would I like a Jack Jones better than Fred Smith based on how their names kind of reverberate with me? This is what I'm expected to do as an informed citizen. And right then and there, I said, you know what? I refuse to be used and abused this way. I'm not going to participate in this charade. I checked those areas where I thought I might have made a difference in the outcome. But then I decided I will not vote ever again until there is a compelling reason for me to vote and until the system earns my respect and my trust. I haven't voted since. There has been no compelling reason, including the election of Barack Obama in 2008 and in 2012. No compelling reason to vote. The system is rigged, and it's a kind of expression of contempt for the voters, because they know the game. We do not. They know why they're having an election, simply to say, well, we've met, you know, the basic qualifications. We had a thing called Election Day. The people have come out and they have voted, and here are the, quote, winners, unquote. But there is a system that is controlling the outcome, controlling our thinking, controlling our actions, informing what we do, that we have absolutely no input in at all. And we now see, I've been on this theme for a bit, as the demographics of the United States and the world are changing. We're seeing a confluence of interest, the coming together, even when they disagree philosophically or ideologically, if they even get to that level of thinking. There is a dramatic move to the right, which they seem to share. And even as they are looking for the game to be played as they design it, they're telling people in so many words, we're about to change the rules of the game, and not for your benefit, but we have to tell you these things so that you know, we can distract you, so you don't really get it. You're not suspecting that we are up to something. But they're up to something. And this election year, despite what people say, well, I differ with this opponent on this thing, and I differ with the other opponent on this other thing, and, you know, that kind of silly stuff that they try to do to make it appear that they have great ideological and philosophical differences with each other. They all agree. They all agree, every single one of them, including those who say they are Cuban or African-American. They all agree that a white supremacist system must be maintained. They all agree on that. And the vestiges of that, well, you're just going to have to deal with that when the time comes, but you should trust their judgment as leaders, their qualifications as leaders, that they know better for you what you than what you know for yourself. And this is why this is a very historic race. The gauntlet has been thrown down. Change has to be made. And when I say change, not change in the way people mean change, change in the way the system means change. The bedrock system that has been put in place to ensure white supremacy in perpetuity, we have to go back to that and safeguard that. If we have to tell you, well, we differ here on banks, and we differ here on war, and we differ here on nuclear energy, and we differ here on climate change, we'll tell you that. But nobody is telling you at all, none of them will tell you, that we have an intention to change, radically alter the system that was devised to maintain white supremacy in the United States. Nobody will tell you that. None of them. In fact, it is required that in order to be a candidate, you first have to pledge your allegiance to that system. Barack Obama is a shining example of that. That was his job. And even now, as he prepares to make his exit, he has to indicate before he leaves an abiding loyalty to the system that has been doing people in, and that he, as president, helped to foment, helped to implement. See? Now, the unspoken word here is that we should all understand that this, and accept, without a fight, without even examining what it is we are doing here in this so-called election, this is not an election. It never is for the masses an election. It's a selection, selection. We get confused all the time because they make it so that we think that we are electing people, but we're not. The people who present themselves for election have already been selected. They are selected people. And they tell you, okay, we're here for election. No, you're not. You're selected. Because all of them, none of them, is the byproduct of the process of our selection. They've been selected by a system. And in order to be selected, to be presented for election, they have to indicate to their various parties and their political interests and so forth, they have to pass muster. Their pledge of allegiance, how genuine is it to the standing order? So when we hear the results tonight, and it will now begin the fever pitch run to the finish line, because now we're being told, hey, now it started. This is the real deal now. It's close to the finish line. The first results are going to be in tonight, and it will shape the outcome in the ensuing months, with all these primaries being held all around the country, and we are in the process of electing our leader. Get out of here with that nonsense. So what are we to do? I keep coming back to the idea that if you identify as not belonging to that group, you're outside of that group, our focus should be on constructing alternative systems that work in our best interests. That's the job. They're very clear about their interests, and they have it organized so that no matter what the outcome, no matter whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, there's only just a cosmetic difference. There is enough there in common to have everybody feel okay. For cosmetic purposes, you know, they will have some differences, or they will tell you that they have differences, but they don't really. Structurally, there really isn't very much of a difference. The problem is that the people who should have their head screwed on right and who should be engaged in alternative activity are falling hook, line, and sinker for this charade. We are buying this nonsense. We are buying this contrived spectacle, which has us in the crosshairs, ironically. But we don't seem to be moving in a direction that says, we get you, we understand you, we know you. So here is what we are doing to fight you. Because that is in our interest. Our interest is to oppose. Our interest is to resist. Our interest is to fight. But they're doing a fantastic job. Because people who should have their head screwed on right are in the middle of everything, jumping up and down and acting as if, well, they have a stake in the outcome too. They don't. We don't have a stake in the outcome. We are the people that the guns are pointed at. I don't see enough of a movement or of movements away from the established order. I don't see enough of a consciousness that this thing is serious. We are being aimed at. We cannot trust these people. We should have absolutely no trust in them whatsoever. And even if they merit some degree of trust, the system that they have already pledged allegiance to does not. So we will have to, again, move them out of the way or move us out of their way. But we cannot support that. We have to construct something else. And not worry. Not worry about, well, what will happen if the Democrats get in? What will happen if the Republicans get in? Hey, look, history has told you what will happen. It doesn't matter who gets in. We had a black president, and the unemployment rate among African Americans in this country, the unemployment rate was higher or as high as it was during the Depression. So you want some kind of useless comfort that, well, you helped to elect the first black president? No. You helped to maintain a system that was dead set against you. You gave every possible bit of elastic to that system to do you in. You failed to construct an alternative. You failed to see to your own interests. And we repeat the cycle over and over and over again, expecting that somehow this time it would be different. If we elect Hillary Clinton, things will be different. What kind of naive thinking is this? It flies in the face of reality. It flies in the face of history. It flies in the face of facts, known facts. It flies in the face of logic. The work remains the same. The work remains the same. You have to have your own system that you control. You have to grow your own leadership. Organic leadership, to put it in the acceptable nomenclature these days, since we all climate control savvy. Grow your own leadership. Create your own reality. See to your own interests. And devise your own systems. It's not going to happen overnight, but look how much time we've wasted. Today, as we begin the month of February, today is the anniversary of Selma to Montgomery March by Dr. Martin Luther King back in 1965. And you say to yourself, well, yes, it was good. And we absolutely need to honor that and commemorate that. But we also have to say that between then and now, look how much time we have wasted, how many opportunities wasted to construct alternative systems. We commemorate the Montgomery bus boycott, for example. But we didn't take the lessons from the Montgomery bus boycott and say, if it was successful in bringing that city to its knees in order to make the point that the services of a city ought to be available to everybody. Okay, you made the point. By now, there should have been a black-owned Montgomery bus company, is what I'm saying. You proved the merit, but you're still stuck on this idea of having to prove to the enemy that you have greater love for the enemy than the enemy has for you. No, you create your own system. That's what all people do when they understand fully that they comprise the oppressed class. When you understand that and you accept that, then you have a very clear head about what it is you need to do. This charade of, well, this candidate is X number of points ahead and this one is X number of points behind. And who cares about that? We know what that is. We should be clear about what that is by now. It's the dance. It's the thing they go through. But there isn't very much disagreement among any of them. There isn't very much disagreement with respect to who should be in control and who should be dominated in this country. They have no qualitative difference of opinion there. Or they'll give you the platitudes and they'll talk about, you know, the things that sound good. But then you square that even against their record, and you see that they say, you know, they talk loud, as James Brown, the great philosopher, says, talking loud and saying nothing. So this year, with the stakes so high, and it's going to get really, really fascistic, as the so-called threat of a diminished capacity, the numeric capacity, is being reduced. And that would increase the anxiety levels. That would increase the need, the psychological need for even greater control. And that means an increased perception of who the enemy is and how important it is to control every aspect of that person or those person's lives. That's what's coming. It's here already. It's going to get even more intense. So we can't be bothered, those of us who understand what is happening, we can't be bothered with this cosmetic, this game that's being played. We have to be totally immersed in this business of survival, which requires us to have our heads screwed on right and our energy directed toward constructing alternative systems that serve our needs. Plain and simple. So that's why I'm not bothering with what's going on here and who's ahead and who's going to get the nod tonight. And I'm not excited about any of that at all. I'm worried about the fact that we're not moving fast enough to construct an alternative to this beast that is being created before our very eyes. The beast of the oligarchy in total and complete control. So that's what I wanted to say to you today, to give you a reason to re-examine this thing, because I tell you, people are being lulled into a kind of sleepwalking, somnambulating through life when the stuff is getting ready to happen like it used to happen back in the old days of the 1600s. There's a rollback. There's a rollback coming. And if we are not prepared, all of us who recognize that this system cannot possibly serve true and genuine needs of people, it is not designed to do that. We have to push from our end. We have to create those things that we need. We have to control some degree of some meaningful proportion of what we can control. We should do that. And we have to put up a fight. That's our job. I leave it here with you today. I thank you for listening. And let me know what you're thinking at leadstories@gmail.com. You can send me a little note and let me know how this program reached you today and what you think about it. Coming up next, the Global Research News Hour. You want to stay tuned for that. And I want to thank you very much. I'm a little slow in getting back to responding to the many, many notes and letters, but I'm catching up. And I thank you so much for taking the time to share your thoughts on leadstories@gmail.com. And we are gearing up for some good things to come. Thank you. Always a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. And I thank you so much for listening. And I encourage you to do some thinking about this time that we're in. Bye-bye. Some say yes, some
Some say no, some wait and see which way the wind blows. But don't you ever let nobody